would think the CPR CNA committee saying something that may allow me to come up here and share this message of hope and promise of freedom.
I want to thank God for another day clean. To us, that's to us, Addiction and Narcotics Anonymous, and home groups all around the world, open up a door for an addict just like me. And I truly want to thank you for sponsorship, which is fruit of the heartbeat of this program. The topic they gave me was grow a goal, turning despair into hope. And it's like I'm a long way from home, and I got here yesterday, right? And the first person I saw was one of my home group members' sponsors. Right, so I gave him a hug, and then the second person I saw was somebody from my area. I gave her a hug, we went and got a cup of coffee. I went to the meeting last night and I saw her. I saw her, the last thing I said to her, I ain't got time to be buying you no damn shoes and having sex with your ass, kick rocks. You see, we talking about turning despair into hope. You see, I got a disease that's progressive, it's incurable, and it's fatal. The diagnosis and detection of this fucker is hard. So I got to know I'm an addict. Who's an addict says, I didn't realize that I was an addict. Says most of us realize that we were addicts before come to. Most of us realize that I did not know that I was an addict before I came to Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't realize what the Narcotics Anonymous program was because I went to AA first. And I said it was the first thing that I did that made me everything that I did. But then it's something about why I'm here. And it says, before coming to the fellowship of NA, I could not manage my own life. It says I could not live and enjoy life as other people do. And it says I had to have something different than I thought I found it in drugs. It says, I placed the use of the head of the wealth for my family, my wife, my husband, and my children. I had to have drugs at all costs. Skip the in-between part, then it says, after. After I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I realized I was a very sick person, that I suffer from a disease from which there is no known cure, but it can ever be arrested at some point, and recovery is impossible. Our message is that an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use drugs, and find a new way to live. Our message is hope, and the only promise we got is freedom from active addiction. And it says, when it's all said and done, the only thing I'm required to do, the only thing that I can do, the only thing that I can hope to do in this process is carry the message to the addict that's still sick and suffering. I'm not finna tell you that I'm blessed. I'm finna tell you that I'm humble and I'm grateful. Because a grateful addict don't use. And I'm not saying that, because see what I believe about when it came for me to change my despair into hope. I was a Catholic altar boy. I sang in a Baptist choir, and my mom and me, I was raised by Jesse Jackson in the west side of Chicago. I've been averse with the esoteric connotation aspect of life all my life. I still smoke dope. Going in the dope and coming out. I still was a hoe. Going in the dope and coming out. I still was a thief. Going in the dope and coming out. And they said, maybe you just need to try this. And I tried. I tried jail. I tried institution. Thank God I didn't die. I came here defeated and hopeless. A judge told me in Bowling Green, Kentucky, pull me out of my cell at 9:30 at night. I'm riddled with guilt, shame, and remorse. She says she ain't letting me come back. This is my ex-wife. She says she ain't letting me come back. So the only thing I knew how to do with everything I knew how to do was get high. So I ended up getting high. Unless I found us everywhere I go. So I found us in Bowling Green, Kentucky, and before you know it, at the end of the road, there it is. Them old platinum handcuffs, I call it. And he told me in no unsaid words, he said, you take your black ass to Louisville, Kentucky, and you do something about your drug problem, I'm going to lock your black ass up for the rest of your life. I did what he told me to do out of fear. I come to Narcotics Anonymous today out of faith. and believe that this program works. We're talking about turning hope and from despair into hope. I was a desperate, dying dope fiend before I came to Narcotics Anonymous. Highly educated, trained diesel mechanic, beautiful children, beautiful ex-wife. I had everything the world said I was supposed to have externally. Everything. By the grace of God and my understanding, I have not. All my friends were dead by the age I was, by the time I was 31 years old. I'll be 51 this year. I thought I could eat rocks and shit nails. I thought I was the great I am. I was Mr. Invincible. That drugs was not a major problem in my life. But it was when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, man. And they told me, man, you don't have to use no dope, even if you want to. That was a hope shot. Because, see, what happened was, when I was a stranger in this foreign land, right, I met these voices. It's something about the voices. And it says unless an opening can be made, a new idea can be engrafted on no closed mind. So I've never heard a black man say, you didn't have to use no damn dope. And I heard these voices at this meeting called Reach for Recovery, 10 o'clock in the morning. My sponsor told me I had on some Italian leather shoes, some Italian slacks, and an Italian silk shirt. He remembered what the hell I wore on. And all I remember was feeling like a pile of shit. Sitting back there in the corner, all 6'4", 234 pounds of me, looking like I'm 5'3", 102 pounds. I had so much guilt on me, so much weight, so much shame. I didn't know what to do. It says, after coming to NA, I realized I was a sick person, that I suffered from a disease from which there's no known cure. If my ass don't want to, listen, the gift of desperation is only a gift one time, newcomer. It's only a gift one time, because acts of desperation come from my intolerance and my inability to accept personal responsibility for my damn recovery. And then I end up, I want to be clean and terminally hip and fatally cool with my oversensitive ass ego and shit, and I want to buy trucks and not pay my electric bill. I want to buy shoes and not buy no damn food. I want to sleep with her, her, and her, all at the same damn time, because I can do that. And then I want to act like my shit don't stand. The three indispensables, I say it all the time. In means infinite. I can never run out of being honest, open-minded, and loving. I can never use those principles up there. I never run out. So it's like when I done been through a lot in this process. Mama done died. I done got divorced. I done had a bad relationship. I done laid in the bed at night, not even wanting to brush my fucking teeth in my own damn bathroom with the lights on. Because I was just riddled with fucking guilt and shame. Not because I just spent up all the damn money. Because my spirit was sick. I remember when he told me that I can no longer settle for sex while seeking love. He told me that. David D. told me that shit 5 years ago. Outside of the meeting. And I didn't understand it at the time. I understand it now. Because I suffered from a spiritual sickness. I suffer from the disease that affects my spirit, my mind. It just so happens manifests in my body. I got a spiritual in nature program called the Program of Narcotics Anonymous, which means I got to use these spiritual principles with my sick ass to deal with my sick ass in a natural way of living. Which means when I saw her last night, when I saw her after seeing him and her, then her, and I made the decision to leave her where she was at, I won. Because I'm a long way from home. Don't nobody know what the hell I'm doing down here. But all my friends know what I can do. And my fourth step say a whole lot of shit about me that I just don't want to relive no more, just for the day. Because it's still a good day to be clean, spiritually, mentally, and emotionally. Drugs is just the most obvious symptom. I ain't used no drugs and going on 8 years. It'll be 8 years, July the 24th, 2011, 17, let God say the same. I ain't used no dope in almost 8 years. But guess what? I still be using that money, property, and prestige. I still be using them people, places, and things. I still like shoes. I still like trucks. I want a brand new motorcycle, and I got a brand new motorcycle. I'm fucked up. I'm messed up for real. But see, left unattended, my disease will tear a patch out my ass. I'll tear a complete, look, take me to the white meat and wonder how I'm going to heal myself up. And what the coolest part about it, see, in the first step, it says, I admit that I was powerless over my disease and that my life had become unmanageable. So when I came here, right, when I came here and I talked about being unmanageable and my honesty and all this other type of stuff, and I got the disease of addiction, I had my esoteric connotations, and I'm like, oh, thank you, God, thank you, God, thank you, God, I praise, and oh, shit, shut the hell up. Because for real, what type of God would let me get high every damn day? What type of God that I'm talking about serving, not merciful. What type of God am I serving that'll let me rob, steal, maim? The literature said I was trying to commit suicide one hit at a damn time. I was too coward to kill my damn self, so I just smoked my life away. But it was something about that unmanageability part. And it's something about the unmanageability part. The literature says, could it be the drugs? I had to ask myself this question. Could it be the drugs? Yup. Then it said I felt as a dope fiend. So here it is, I'm driven by an unknown force that's affecting me, mind, body, and spirit. I don't know I got it. It's wearing my ass out because I'm living for it. It ain't trying to do nothing for me. It's trying to kill me day in and day out. I'm trying to keep it alive by killing myself. I'm trying to keep active addiction alive, not even knowing I'm killing myself. I was desperate as hell for that. It says that the things that I did, the things, the acts that I committed, showed me that there were signs of desperation in my life. And that I needed a loving and caring power greater than myself to restore me to sanity, which is what the second step is all about. And guess where I found out about the restoration of sanity? In one church. It went my truck. It went my motorcycle. It went that juicy booty. It went them blue jeans. I found out about coming to Narcotics Anonymous meetings. Hearing people that I know nothing about, sharing about some shit that I did and I could identify. It says, once I identify myself as an addict, then help becomes possible. That's the literature. Say, I'll make this shit up. I keep it real simple. Because see, it's something about our language that is spiritual in nature for everybody who, the addict and the potential addict, can hear this. But if I come in here with my esoteric connotations, ain't nobody going to hear me. Because all that really means is I'm just going to share what I believe the God of my understanding is, how I practice that. I'm just governed by a loving and caring power greater than myself up in here, so I better check my ass at the door if I want to be a part of the we. If I don't check me at the door, I'm not a part of the we. Because something about me always crying out for failure, and in desperate, I call myself sharing for somebody, sharing on somebody, trying to free my motherfucking self. Or attacking the whole damn meeting because I feel bad about me. Or giving a motherfucker suggestion that I wasn't even asked to give. Just being honest. I've been there and done that before. I don't like how I feel. It was something about when he told me about that. I ain't bouncing around. I'm just telling like it is. I ain't make this up. This is what he told me to do. It was something about when he told me not to settle for sex while seeking love. That was like the coolest thing in the world. But then when it manifested in my body, that my spirit was sick and I was about to throw up on top of her. For some reason, I was able to tell my first wife, I ain't calling my motherfucking son no damn more. Every time I tell him I'm coming to town, he answers the phone. And then when I get there, his punk ass don't answer the phone. When I was able to tell her that just a few months ago, I was free of the motherfucker. But it started with something about my insides. The desperate acts, buying them kids everything they didn't need and want. Being emotionally blackmailed because I didn't know how not to be emotionally blackmailed. Suffering with situations and circumstances in life that I could never talk about. I was told men don't cry. That a man can do whatever the hell he want to do with his money, just as long as he's taking care of his woman and his household. They didn't give me no way to do it. They just said this is all I had to do. Which means if I would smoke up all the money, I had to go steal the rent money. If I would smoke up all the money, I had to go steal the electric money. If I smoked up all the money, I had to go steal the shoe money for my kids. And that was a vicious cycle all of my life. But it's something about, man, that gift of desperation that I found hope. And it's like I was walking around the building, right? And I'm around a whole bunch of addicts. I ain't nobody asked me to turn no tricks. Ain't nobody looking on the floor for some shit that's not there. Ain't no fights. Ain't no snatching purses. Ain't no mob of police around here watching us. And there's a power, man. There's a power. The literature say there's a power that when you walk in the room, it can be felt. There's a power about this place, man. And so what happens is my loneliness, my insecurity, my low self-esteem, and my low self-worth that plagues me all the time, no matter, I can't control it. I got a way out of not letting it run me all the time. You see, because I got something else. Then when the desperate act of, man, I'm up here, I'm down here by myself, I got my room by myself, look at that butt. Shit. I'm just being honest. Even when I go on Sunday, I sit all the way up front so I ain't got to look at butts. Because I already know my flavor. But see, my taste buds done changed. My taste buds done changed. See, I may like to look at it, but I know I better not eat of it because I'm going to find myself sick. This is my belief. When I start doing something that's counterproductive to my spirit, I'm in self-will. I done took my decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God's understanding back, and I got to be able to suffer the consequences on my damn own. Henceforth, 81 into 55, and he told me, you ain't riding that damn motorcycle in my county no more. He said, you got to get it towed. Not doing no dope in Waverly, Virginia, I was able to get it towed 10 miles. And I followed instructions. Because I was desperate. I was desperate because I told her I was going to be on time at 8:30 in Suffolk, Virginia. This is how powerful this disease is. I'm not okay with not being on time. And then when I'm not on time, when I find myself running late, when I had all day to be on time, all day long to be on time. When I find myself running late, I want to pull the coals to the throttle, and I want to do 81 in the 55. I'm on a 4-lane highway with no median, and I'm in the center of the lane. And my brain says that's the best way to ride a bike. That's what my head, I got disease thinking too. And it's undetectable. I don't know when it's going to manifest. It'll come at me in the slip of the night with a whole damn crunch cake. Not no motherfucking slice. I'm talking about the whole damn thing. Talk about the whole thing. And I cut it, chunk it, cut it, chunk it. God damn, I wake up with crumbs all in my damn bed and all that shit. But the box be empty. I ain't the only one that do that shit. Don't be laughing at me. I didn't know how to grieve when my mom died. And when you don't know something, and I'm coming to a place that can help me find a new way to live. And I don't come in and it says when at the end of the road, I find that I can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs. I face a dilemma. I had a dilemma. I didn't know how to grieve. I didn't know what it felt like. I didn't know how to feel. I didn't know how to think. And what that turned into was a tumultuous relationship with somebody much, much older than me that I believed was enhancing me, but really was destroying me. Because the God of my understanding, it says, my loving and caring power greater than myself can't be something I can see, feel, taste, or touch. And she became a power greater than me. And we started a good-ass business. I was making money hand over foot. And I was the only one doing the damn work, and she wasn't doing no paperwork. And while I'm out there working, she was crying about me being out there working, but her black ass is spending up all the damn money I was making. Right? That's how this shit go. See, the disease will make me deny that I got a damn disease, and I put myself in a jackpot situation, hot damn it, and get myself used, not use somebody else. Because, see, I'm going to tell you the truth. I believe once you stop using dope, and you get a pay raise, you damn right you better have something to show for it. That's just my belief. Because I know I smoked enough dope that damn to finance a couple of tribes in Africa. So I know if you smoked anywhere close as I did, shit, you better have some money. You better have some money. And acts of desperation for me was, you know, to turn how the despair came in was, I always thought something that I could see, feel, taste, or touch could fix me. So I had 196 pair of fucking sneakers. I had 124 pairs of pants. I had shirts in the closet that I was never going to wear. You understand what I'm saying? Because I'm a diesel mechanic. I don't give a damn about no clothes. But I had them. And then, so what happened was, I got hurt, and I broke up with the chick, and I got hurt, and I had to move all this stuff from a one-bedroom apartment to a 100-year-old four-bedroom house. And the motherfucking shit didn't fit. The furniture didn't fit. The shoes didn't fit in no closet. The shorts and pants, none of that shit fit nowhere. So one day I came in from work, and we know how you just move and you throw the stuff in the floor, and I tripped over like four bags of shoes. And I cried like a baby. How dare I? How dare I? Some shit that I didn't even deserve, wasted like a motherfucker. I didn't even deserve to be alive. The man was gonna give me life in prison over dope. Not because I was a bad person. I don't suffer from no damn moral deficiency or no moral dilemma. I ain't no bad person. I just did some bad things to get some damn dope. I was controlled by unknown force. I was enslaved. Imagine, enslaved. Afraid to walk down a bright street in the daytime. Waiting for it to be dark to go through the alley. Riding past the gas station to run out of dope and then run out of gas. Still in that Carhartt suit with the boots and the hat, going to leave the house in some shorts and a t-shirt, my new Carhartt suit, to run out of gas in the truck with not the Carhartt suit and a snowstorm. There's something about why I'm here. It says, we were searching for the answer when we reached out and found Narcotics Anonymous. We came to our first NA meeting in defeat and didn't know what to expect. It says, after sitting in a meeting or several meetings, we began to feel that people cared and were willing to help. It says, although my mind told me that it would never make it and that the people of fellowship gave me hope but insisted that I could recover, I found that no matter what my past thoughts or actions were, others had felt and done the same. Surrounded by fellow addicts, I realized that I was not alone no more. It says, recovery is what happens in our meetings. Our lives are at stake. We find it by putting recovery first, the program works. It says by putting recovery first, the program works. Not my damn job, not my damn kids, not my boo mama. By putting it, listen, it took me a motherfucking meeting to get damn near 8 years clean. It took my first meeting to get to the next meeting. I just had to get to the next meeting clean. I faced 3 disturbing realizations that I'm powerless over my addiction and my life is unmanageable. It says, although I'm not responsible for my disease, I am responsible for my recovery. Recovery is the active change of attitudes and ideas. It ain't what the fuck I drive. It ain't what the fuck she look like. It ain't how much money I got in my pocket. Those are benefits of being clean. It says, I can no longer blame people, places, and things for my addiction. And it says, this is cool ass must. It says, I must face my problems and my feelings. See, and there's something about problems and feelings that lead to desperate acts while clean, and I be rendering myself hopeless. See, if I ain't facing my feelings, mama died. Wanting to go back to my ex-wife, but knowing damn well not to go back to my ex-wife. Real talk, went back 5 times, 3 times clean. Wanting to move, but nowhere else to go. And the coolest part about turning despair into hope is that I've found a home in Narcotics Anonymous. And if you can't get no hope up in this bitch, something's wrong with your ass. My name is Jeff. I'm a great for coming out. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you, Jeff.